Day Street Books and Harper Audio present Piety and Power, Mike Pence and the Taking of the White House, by Tom LoBianco, read by Kaleo Griffith. Introduction. The Caretaker Government. The cherry red faux antique phone sits on the top left corner of the resolute desk. President Michael R. Pence sits behind it, papers neatly arranged across the desk. The gold curtains that former President Donald Trump hung from the windows around the Oval Office have been replaced with something a bit more traditional, a bit more austere. But the painting of President Andrew Jackson remains, and therein lies the reminder that Pence now straddles the divide between the American tradition and the wild, chaotic populism that ultimately put him in the presidency. A small coterie of advisors attends most of the meetings in the Oval Office with the new president, Pence, number 46. There's Mark Short, the master of pulling levers on Capitol Hill, Kellyanne Conway, Pence's longtime political consultant who miraculously survived the entirety of Trump's presidency. There's Josh Pitcock, the one-time chief of staff from the vice president's office, who had been deemed too wonkish and operational in 2016, but whose talents are back in vogue now that Pence has won the big prize. And then there's the one advisor who's never in the room, but always present, a reminder reflected in the high gloss of the red phone. Karen Pence. Pence's victory at the polls in 2024 wasn't resounding, but it was a victory, a testimony to his long-term strategy to ride the wave of the political moment, but never lead it. He just held on tight until Trumpism's bitter end. His signature achievement in 8 years of carrying Trump's water was the establishment of a strong network of anti-abortion pregnancy centers, centers that curbed abortions and access to prenatal care by undercutting Planned Parenthood clinics across the country. For pro-life activists who view their crusade in terms no less grand than the effort to end slavery, this was a resounding victory after decades of chipping away at the constitutional right. The irony is that Trump still gets all the credit for being the strongest anti-abortion president in the nation's history. And now, after Trump made a total of 4 appointments to the Supreme Court, jam-packed the federal courts, recorded 7 video messages for the annual Right to Life March, and beat back allegation after allegation of infidelity, Pence has almost nothing left to take credit for, which he is okay with, honestly. He's always been the caretaker, the one who comes in after a big change and tidies up. When he was governor, he toiled in the shadow of Mitch Daniels, and now that he's president, he's left dealing with all that Trump has left behind. But none of that matters. He's president. Number 46. This, of course, is an imagining of what the Pence presidency would look like. But it is rooted in the reporting throughout this book. It is based on an assessment of his political style, his executive abilities, his tight-knit circle of advisors, and the values at his personal core. Kellyanne Conway surprised me once by turning the tables and asking me what my assessment of Pence's time in the White House was. Is he a glorified coat rack or the Svengali, secretly tugging the strings of Trump and the U.S. government? I answered that he seemed to fall somewhere in between. He is the ultimate political shapeshifter. By turns, neither Dan Quayle nor Dick Cheney, but he can inhabit the persona of either if required. To truly understand what a Pence presidency would look like, his governorship is the best model. It was the only time he was stripped of all protections and left to decide things flatly for himself. Which leads us back to the red phone at the corner of the desk. With Trump in such a weak position as president, unaware of the deep details and complex issues that swarm.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?